DW Africa Link.
As we journalists face increasing threats, censorship tightens, and independent voices are silenced, the media landscape is entering a dangerous new chapter. From shattered radio stations to the arrest of reporters, the erosion of press freedom is no longer a warning. It's a stark reality that demands our immediate attention. In this episode, we unpack what's happening, why it matters, and what's at stake for democracy in Uganda. This year, the World Press Freedom Day Global Commemoration, which united media professionals and individuals from around the world, focused on the profound influence of artificial intelligence, AI, on journalism and media under the theme Reporting in the Brave New World, the Impact of AI on Press Freedom and the Media. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
World Press Freedom Day reminds governments to uphold their commitment to press freedom and offers a moment of reflection on media ethics and the challenges journalists face. It is also a day to support media under threat and honor journalists who lost their lives in pursuit of the truth. In Uganda, ranked 143 on the 2025 World Press Freedom Index, press freedom remains under pressure, with journalists frequently barred from covering opposition events and facing hostility from police. We now turn to Uganda for a conversation with Robert Sempala, Executive Director of the Human Rights Network for Journalists, and DW's Kampala correspondent, Frank Higa, to discuss the fight to protect journalists and ensure their safety. I'll start with you, Mr. Sempala. How would you describe the media landscape at the moment?
The media landscape in Uganda is characterized by a lot of challenges that makes it only part-free. So you know that journalists are not free. They are only partly free to do some bit of their work. And such challenges bring us back to a level where we think that a lot has to be done for us to have press freedom that is really felt, that can be touched, that is really functional, away from what might be said about things like the multiplicity of media houses, which may not directly translate into press freedom in the country. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have a lot that we have to contend with in order to live true to the essence of press freedom. Some journalists are free, especially those that are in the areas of entertainment, education, like educating and entertaining others, that are doing personal stories that don't border on the civil and political rights coverage. Most journalists that I target and victimize over time now have been those that cover the political opposition, and more so those that work with seemingly independent media houses. And the main forces to contend with are certainly the security forces. For many years, 16 years, when HRNG has been producing an annual press freedom index, they have been at the top of the perpetrators of violence against journalists. So in a nutshell, journalists are met with a lot of harassment in terms of intimidation, those assaults, confiscation of their gadgets, blocking them from accessing news scenes, but generally using underhand methods of handing out harassment, and also using legal and regulatory frameworks to curtail the free flow of information and freedom of expression generally. Yeah, that is how it is down here.
Coming to you now, Frank Higa, you are an active senior journalist in Uganda, also our reporter on the ground. How challenging has it been for a journalist to do their work in Uganda, especially looking at the current political atmosphere and also reporting for an international media?
So, Josie, to some extent, practicing journalism under the current political environment in Uganda has freedom and conducive atmosphere for expression and practice, just as it is when reporting on social and economic stories. It is clear that media dissemination of political stories is dominant in our local news and much sought after on different media, media outlets like print, online platforms, TV and radio. So there are many political developments in Uganda that journalists engage in. For instance, if I'm to say the frequent press briefings organized by political parties, reporting on corruption, governance, name it, which I observe as not so grave and challenging because journalists exercise their freedom and rights as required by the profession. I'll agree with Robert where he said that, yes, it is to some extent that journalists' rights are infringed on. And of course, some, like in other sectors, he mentioned it, education, entertainment, those, of course, have the freedom to exercise their profession. However, of late, we are seeing worrying and deteriorating trends in media freedom. And it has become so dire when reporting on particular political developments or on particular political individuals, offices, systems, even occurrences. As a journalist, it puts us in an uncertain situation of freedom of speech, but not freedom after speech. At times when you file a story, you don't know what may happen. So journalists in Uganda, particularly those who cover political stories and some who practice investigative journalism, well, it's not business as usual. And it has become a norm for journalists to be battered during elections. We're in the election time soon. We're going into the elections and worries are high. You know, whenever there's a rally, especially those staged by the government, so some journalists, especially those in the private sector, really get worried. And a case in point, if you remember, Jose, it was reported globally how journalists were battered in the recently concluded by-election in Kawempe North, which left many journalists with serious injuries and some hospitalized and their equipment destroyed by security operatives. So my personal experience, Jose, if I'm to tell you this, whenever I'm commissioned to cover a story about a high-ranked government official, I get, commissions. At times we pitch stories to our editors. I first apply my personal conscience on the possible repercussions as required by my journalism profession. I deeply think and reflect what might happen if I do this. There are those particular people we get worried about. And also, it's challenging because it puts us in the position of bending, say, the elements of and principles of our profession, like accuracy, truth, objectivity, impartiality. You know, we bend all those in fear.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no story worth dying for. But I'm also just wondering, because I recently interviewed the Minister of Justice in your country, in Uganda, Justice, that's Norbert Mao. And when I asked him this question about clamping down on journalists, he abruptly denied that, that the government is not doing that, that those are all lies. So I'm just wondering, Frank, who is responsible for violating journalists' rights in the country?
Well, the one responsible, well, that question may not have an answer for sure, because it could be the state, the army, police, or the government security agencies, or even individuals. It is really hard to tell sometimes who is responsible. We have had situations, for instance, the by-election we had recently, where journalists were battered by armed men wearing a JAT uniform. In the company of police and the army. But interestingly, when they were asked, who owned this operation, who should take the blame for what happened to journalists, everyone denied. The EPDF said, no, it's not the operation. The police also denied. Not until later, the government came up to own their actions. So it is really hard to tell. That's why at times you say it is the police, it is the army. Other than pinning points. Although the government and the army at times say that they're going to pin individuals for their actions, But these individuals, or the soldiers or police, act on orders. So it leaves us, you know, perplexed on who actually is to blame. But as far as I know, it is the state. It is the one to use. For in the state, you find the army, you find the police and those security.
Right. Robert, let me come back to you. I don't know what, if you want to add something on this particular question on what Frank has said, but also if you can tell us about the Press Freedom Index report 2024 that you unveiled a few days ago to mark World Press Freedom Day.
Thank you very much. Frank has ably articulated the circumstances around who is responsible. And I think it was right for the Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister not to give you an answer, because these issues that the government has for the longest time not come out to own, though the military or the UPDF, that's the Uganda People's Defense Forces, have been a bit forthcoming to say, hey, sorry, this happened. We are very sorry. It should not have happened. So they take a little more responsibility than the police. And who is responsible can best be answered by the recent Press Freedom Index reports that we have released for the last 16 years, which categorically brings out the nature of violations, the perpetrators, does the trends and analysis patterns, and also speaks to the areas that have improved or not improved. So they have always pitied the police and other security forces, but mainly the police has been at the helm of perpetrating violence against the journalists in the line of duty. And most of the cases have been assault, blocking journalists from accessing the news scenes, which was the highest this time for us. And being the fact that we are into a media industry, we need our raw materials, which is information. So if one blocks you from accessing information, they literally are killing your media industry. And this came at with a figure of 52 out of 110 that we documented in the in over reporting year, which is 2024. And that was really a high number. Of course, it was followed by arrests, which came down to 25, and then destruction of gadgets, 11 cases, among other cases. But most notably, about this is that the power holders, all those that are responsible, have all come out to deny vehemently being irresponsible, and in a way that has entrenched impunity, where those that orchestrate violence against journalists walk away scot-free because their superiors, instead of taking actions and being and reprimanding them, have instead come in to defend them, to find flimsy reasons to blame it on the journalists. For instance, saying the journalists were not well branded, they mixed up with rioters or demonstrators. But a case in point where we realize that these are always deliberate and targeted beatings is what my colleague Frank talked about, the recent by-elections in Kawempe North, where a journalist that had a press jacket on, that had a camera or a phone seemingly recording anything, was targeted, and the locals resorted to giving safe havens to the journalists to keep away from the military men who were hooded. You couldn't know who it was. So for me, that answers the question on who is responsible. We also have cases that come from the community, but these are people that we are able to identify most times. These are people that we have gone to court to challenge. But the others whose identities are concealed, it makes it extremely difficult for us to even pursue them. So in the mix of everything, we leave many journalists seeking for justice, but in vain, because the perpetrators are smart. They want to leave no trace of evidence to pin them, because we have progressive laws that can nail an individual perpetrator, but you can't even apply it, because the threshold for proving a criminal case against such an errant security person is hard, given the fact that they are disguised. So makes it a bit complex. But the answer lies within the reports, which have not been disputed. They have not been challenged by anyone over the record 16 years. So we think that this is very, very verified information as to who is behind attacking the journalists in the line of duty, but also intimidating media houses and media practitioners, you know, making it a bit infested with a lot of fear, which has later, in the long run, culminated now into a lot of self-censorship. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. From what you're saying, Robert, it really looks like the situation in Uganda is actually deteriorating more than before. But then there's also something you say that the state says some of the journalists are becoming more, should we say, activists. They're also joining protests and things like that. That's their reasons of clamping down on these. And I'm just wondering as well if that aspect is touched on in your report, because probably the government also has evidence, and some journalists are doing that. And just wondering if this is due to political reasons that the situation is getting worse, or its lack of professionalism.
I can say that it is a combination of both, to be realistic, because we have professional glitches that happen from time to time. And all ourselves in the media development have labored so much, cutting across the country to build capacities of journalists in the ethical and professional practices of journalism. So this is not a very huge challenge in the face of many people, because those people, journalists that have been beaten, disabled, their gadgets confiscated, or even destroyed, have not been performing below the standard bar. Have been performing well. These are journalists that we really are all proud of. And these attackers do not even want to know the level of knowledge you have out in the field, your experience, which media house you're coming from. It's a random a beating on site. So the issue of the professional standards for me does not merit, because if it were the case, the best people to improve on such a situation would not be the men in uniform, would be the training institutions, would be refresher courses, would be more than that. So where journalists are accused of being activists, I've seen it, and doesn't only come from the opposition-leaning side. It also is a lot. Actually, it's more pronounced even when it comes to the ruling party, where you see most journalists take to the stage, take photos as they clad in the yellow color uniforms, which are for the ruling party. We have photos and videos of the said journalists, but they have not been beaten. So it is a selective application of power or of the law in any case. If you're beating the journalists that are covering this side, it should also apply across the board, though we do not condone that. Because if that is a crime, we assume that the law should be put to practice. And our constitution presupposes innocence before proven guilty by a court of competent jurisdiction. Short of that, no one is allowed or mandated, not even the military or the police, to beat a journalist. Because in any case, how are you going to be able to be the complainant? Then you constitute yourself into a jury. Then you sit and convict a journalist and pass a sentence against them, and then you say you've restored order. I think that is a total abuse of the due process of the law, and is total violation of human rights. More so, it's an affront to press freedom.
Right. Now, coming back to you, Frank, you know, I did mention before that I've spoken to Minister of Justice, that's Nobe Mayo. And whilst I was actually preparing to speak to you, my producer alerted me on a statement recently, I think, on this particular subject that we are talking about. And I personally feel like at times Nobe Mayo is an objective person. But in this particular statement, he accused the journalists of fanning the political flames. In other words, you know, being responsible for the violence meted against them by the police and by security operatives. You, as a reporter and a journalist on ground, what do you have to say about that?
Well, Jose, your thought of Minister Nobe Mayo being objective wasn't wrong. Your report, your thought is right. He's objective. However, he has two masters to serve. Nobe Mayo is originally and formally an opposition politician. Currently, he has duties to perform as a government minister. We don't know the arrangements he had with the government to appoint an opposition politician to be minister. But of course, people say there was an arrangement, of course, subject to confirmation. But still, he's caught between a rock and a hard place. On so many times, we've seen Nobe Mayo, you know, castigating the government operations, you know, against journalists and innocent civilians. So we don't believe him at all. I totally don't believe his words, and he doesn't mean them.
Right, right. Now, as we wrap up our discussion, I come to you, Frank. Do you see the police changing their ways anytime soon to protect your rights as and other journalists?
Yes, I would borrow the biblical adage. It's as hard as passing a camel in the needle's eye. It is practically impossible for now, or even in the near future, to have the police correct their wrongs, their bad actions against journalists. Because the system that we have now is not the first time we're seeing it, that is meting, sorrow onto journalists. It hasn't started now or today. We had it in the previous police heads, because they keep appointing new Inspector General of Police, new IGPs every now and then, and one after the other. It is the system. It seems there's a script they follow, or there is an order they follow on how things are supposed to be done. And as far as we're still in the same governing system, that means we are doomed. We're still going to face the wrath of the police, we as journalists, because even those who come after the current police administration will as well do the same. So for now and in the near future, I'm sorry to say, we see no hope of them revising their actions to make them better for us to operate as journalists.
All right. Robert, I also come to you wrapping up our very important discussion. Now, what should be done to protect the rights of journalists in Uganda and the rest of Africa?
Thank you very much once again. I am very sure that this is a million-dollar question to any journalist in Uganda and Africa, because the journalists have done their part. We as media development actors have done our part. The civil society has equally done its part. And everyone else is doing their part, apart from those that are in the security, namely the military, the police, and the political heads. I think we really need to appeal to the political will of those in leadership to have a systematic campaign and proactive support voices for free, independent, and pluralistic media. That is when we can be able to reprimand those that abuse and violate press freedom. That's when we can be able to end impunity for crimes committed against journalists. That's when we can have progressive legislation for a flourishing media. And that's when we can bring back the trust, which seems to be well long lost. And I know that all that is possible, much as it's as difficult as Frank said, camel going through that safety pin small hole. But I believe in the future, where all of us have been able to talk to each other, to speak truth to power, and having a convergence point that is facilitative for both of us to peacefully coexist, the military, the security forces, and the media. It's a very tall, but I know we can get there someday.
Robert Sempala, Executive Director of the Human Rights Network for Journalists Uganda, and DW's Kampala correspondent Frank Higa, many thanks for joining us. At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. Despite challenges journalists face across Africa, there are some countries that respect media rights, like Botswana, Namibia, and South Africa. The media in these countries is vibrant and cognizant of reporting on development issues and government's efforts in uplifting the standards of its people. One can only hope that countries like Uganda can borrow a leaf and respect media freedoms. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a vital part of our community, and your engagement can significantly influence the direction of our discussions. We highly value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. You can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe, My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.